podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Lookout, a mobile security company trusted by over 40 million customers. Lookout specializes in stopping new cyber threats, finding lost or stolen phones, and backing up data. Protect your Android device now by visiting lookout.com/AAA for a free download. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit allaboutandroid.ting.com. That's allaboutandroid.ting.com. Hello, and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 122, recorded on Tuesday, August 13th, 2013. We are hopefully your source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. My name is Jason Howell.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
It's good to be back. We had a last-minute kind of email sent out this morning from Ron saying, I'm sorry, the real, you know, day job beckons, and I can't join you. But that's okay, because Miriam, you have come to save the day.
I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Is that what I'm totally doing? Saving the day?
Yeah, well, kind of. I mean, we already had you booked, so you were already going to save the day.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, thanks for having me. This is great.
It is awesome having you here. Senior mobile editor at Engadget, also co-host of the Engadget mobile podcast.
Correct.
Yeah, so you have a lot to say about Android.
I have a lot to bitch about,
yeah. Yeah, excellent. That's what this show needs. Yeah. More bitching. That should be our tagline. We bring bitching to Android.
I mean, you know, it's Android. Yeah. Right? You're never going to be making everybody happy with Android. So.
That is so true.
Right?
Unfortunately, that's very true.
Lots of custom ways to
yes.
to comment on Android.
there's the way that you can get the Google sanctioned way, and then there's the way that all the other OEMs.
You mean the rest of the crap?
Yeah, they muck it up. There we go. Well, we're going to be talking about all that stuff this week, discussing the LG G2, which became official, the next Nexuses, or at least rumors about them, drama in AOSPville, Chromecasting, pretty much anything, hopefully coming soon, and so much more.
Yeah, I like that you said drama, because that's exactly what I wrote in one of my posts. I didn't want to get into it, and I said open source drama.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. You know, there's Android drama, and then there's open source drama, and then they connected that
day. And I'm happy that you're here, because I was trying to parse this, especially considering some kind of later news that kind of develops into this. Let's not dance around it anymore. Let's just jump right into the news and talk about it. So let's see if I do this justice, trying to explain a little bit about what happened here. First, it was noted that the new Nexus 7 factory images had not been released, something that usually happens rather quickly when it comes to Google's own Nexus line, especially. Then the man that heads up the AOSP, the Android Open Source Project, Jean-Baptiste Guerou, announced on Google Plus that he was quitting AOSP. He noted there's no point being the maintainer of an operating system that can't boot to the home screen on its flagship device for lack of GPU support, especially when I'm getting the blame for something that I don't have authority to fix myself, and that I had anticipated and escalated more than 6 months ahead. Now, okay, so end quote. The GPU for the Nexus 7 is courtesy of Qualcomm, so the issue appeared to be related to that, and Jean-Baptiste is well-liked in the Android dev community, so this came as quite an unexpected shock at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can understand the frustration, especially on Jean-Baptiste's side of things, but honestly, look, your work, I mean, anybody who thinks Android is really open source is kidding themselves, you know? I mean, that's the problem. As soon as you you know, partner up with some with companies like Qualcomm and NVIDIA, you're going to get into the driver land, which is always going to be, you know, intellectual property, and it's not going to be easy to open source.
Sure.
So I kind of understand his frustration, because on paper, that was the belief of the whole Nexus thing, and the belief of all of Android is to make everything available open source so we can all build our own versions of Android. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, I think it's kind of... I think it's kind of naive to think that that would be the case going forward with the partnerships with companies like Qualcomm. And it's not, I'm not blaming Qualcomm. I just think that it's just, you have to be realistic about it.
Maybe Qualcomm isn't necessarily to blame. No. So kind of following this around further, right? So this, all this hoopla, you know, happened around what I've talked about. Finally, Google then made the images available shortly after all this went down, which made it easy to instantly peg the Nexus 7 based on these details. You know, based on Qualcomm, and they're suddenly responding to Jean-Baptiste leaving. Maybe that's what's happening here. But as it turns out, the Nexus 10, Samsung's tablet, is currently not supported in AOSP as of 4.3, meaning no graphic drivers are out with the 10, whereas everything is out for the 7. Mm-hmm. So I guess one thing's for sure, we don't really know which scenario actually brought Jean-Baptiste to the breaking point. Probably a little combination of all of the above, but it's really too bad to see kind of such a well-respected member of the Android developer community.
I mean, there's
step
probably
down.
More going on here.
Absolutely.
I mean, he might have joined at a time when the politics was such that, yeah, we really have all the intents and purposes to make Android super open source and to work with our partners to make the drivers open source. But the realities of business came in, and over the years, that became stale, and maybe he got frustrated after that. You know, I think it's unfortunate all around, but I don't want to sound jaded, but I'm not surprised. I don't know how you feel, Gina, about this, but...
I was really bummed about this. So, I develop for Android, and I am a big open source user, enthusiast, and the thing about open source software, wherever it lands on the continuum, and it's true that Android is a different kind of open source project, and that's, it's, you know, some argue that it's not as open maybe as it should be. But the truth about open source projects is that they're only as good as their leaders. Like, they're only as good as the people who are shepherding them and overseeing them and maintaining them. And JBQ was very well loved, and he works at Google. I mean, and this is the thing about Android, right? Is that, like, Google works on Android kind of in private, right? And then, like, batch releases the code, you know, every whatever, each release, right? Which is kind of the reason why people say that it's not really open, right? Because you're not seeing, like, nightly commits
every
single night, and other companies aren't committing to Android as it's in development, right? I think that there are really good reasons for this. I think that Google is walking a very, very fine line between creating a commercial product that's also open source. I happen to think that they're doing a good job. I think that there are different flavors of open source. I'm not one of these kind of super zealous people who's like, well, it's not really open. I'm okay with how they've been doing it. But the fact that JBQ, like, quit so publicly and said what he said, I mean, that was, like, very strong words. It made me worried. It made me worried about the leadership. It made me worried about Google stewardship. It made me concerned that I understand he's still employed by Google, but he just decided not to maintain Android anymore, which
that's
seems
my understanding, but it's all been kind of shaded heavily. You know, I'm sure he's limited in what he can actually talk
I mean, I
about.
Think I'm sure there's more going on here, but I think, and I agree with you that open source, you know, there's many different flavors of it, but I'm saying that, you know, a lot of times people think of Android as a super open source thing with daily commits, but it's not, you know? And in that regard,
it's more open than what we had before.
It's more open than iOS, that's
for
sure.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but the thing is, I am not surprised that drivers are not available in source code format, that they're only available as binaries, and that they're not available right away when the rest of AOSP is available. And I'm kind of surprised that Jean-Baptiste would, you know, get upset over this. I mean, it's like, this is the way it's been all along. So there's potentially more here.
This is how Google works, right? Like, at the heart of Google, you have these really well-meaning geeks and engineers who, like, care about the tech, right? And then they sort of brought in the lawyers and the marketing people and the business people around them, right, to, like, help them do business. And you know, I think sometimes there's tension between those folks. I mean, it's the, you know, the do no evil story, right? It's like the engineer said, you know, wrote, you know, don't be evil on a whiteboard to, like, let the marketing folks and the lawyers know, like, hey, don't screw this up. And I think there's a constant tension going on, right, between the, like, the really passionate, well-meaning geeks who have, like, high morals about certain things, and then the sort of realities of the business world. But what concerns me is that Google wasn't able to sort of figure this out internally, and that there was, I mean, this would be like Jason, you know, publicly posting on Google Plus, like, I'm just sick and tired of editing these podcasts. You know what I mean?
Like, Leo, quit looking at me. I'm not. No, it's okay. It's okay. I'm cool. I love my job, sir.
It would be a weird thing. I would be a little worried about Twit. I'd be like, what is going on there? You know? So I'm concerned. I'm also sort of curious from a perspective of like, so can he quit the open source? Like, wasn't that not one of his like job roles as a Google employee? He's still an employee. That's that. But it definitely made me concerned as a developer. I was like, oh, this is not good. You don't want to see this kind of discord amongst the leadership, especially a guy like this who was so well loved and so active and that developers look to as a leader. You don't want to see a guy like that back down because it makes you wonder what's going on there.
I'll be curious to know where he ends up. One thing that Google is very good at is promoting the fact that if you're over one part of your job, you know, if you're overdoing your job and you've been there a while and everything, they actively, you know, allow you and encourage you to move into something else that might kind of wake you up again and make you inspired
and
again.
It so could just maybe be, you know, that's in. It. He's just, you know, maybe just tired of it in other ways. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is my observation of Android over the last year or two is that they are changing. And I mean, they are changing by becoming, you know, more horizontal in the sense that they're, you know, with Larry coming in and kind of focusing on user experience, which we've seen as end users, it's been really delicious, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it started with iOS apps, and now it's finally on the Android apps. And I think we're seeing some of that happen in all aspects of Google. And I think it's potentially touching Android and poking at parts of people inside Android that are, you know, kind of not cool with that.
Right.
Because now they have to kind of, you know, not like look at, they dropped Google Talk, they dropped XMPP as well, it still works, but eventually it's going to go away. And I mean, part of the reason I became a big proponent of using Google services for myself was because it was using a lot of open standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do feel a little weird about the fact that they're changing that. But on the other hand, you know, the reality is that I can still use them. And they work better than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps some of the issues that they were running into with trying to continue using these open standards just didn't made the products stagnate or not able to evolve fast enough to keep up.
If they turn specifically to Motorola for all of their future Nexus devices, does this then go away? They have control. Well, because they don't have control of all of the components at that point, though, right? But
Motorola is still using Qualcomm cores inside their own custom implementation of CPU for an SoC. So I don't know. I don't think any of that is going to go away. I think the reality is that we have to be happy with a hybrid approach to software development. You can do open source, but you're not going to get everything open source.
Yeah.
And you just have to live with that. And it doesn't mean it can't be good.
Yeah,
like,
fair enough.
I think that's the thing. It's like there's this kind of us versus them mentality in the open source community that says that, you know, iOS is evil because it's not open source and Android is good when we all know it's not really as open as it could be.
Right.
When, you know, I can point you to open source projects that are truly open source, but nobody's using them. I mean, Yola is awesome. Who's using Yola right now? Right? I mean, it's completely fully open source, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know. I think you have to be
totally
pragmatic
agree.
About it.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Very well said. All right. What else is going on in Android land, Gina?
Well, BoardGenius reports that Android is crushing iOS everywhere, but maybe in the United States. Usage trends in the U.S. appear to be stalling or even going down, according to new IDC numbers, which estimate Android accounted for almost 80% of smartphones shipped in Q2 2013. But in the U.S., it looks like that's starting to peak a little bit. Simcoe's Horace Dedieu, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, said Android might have peaked with stalled growth this past quarter. The number of U.S. Android users declined for the first time ever, albeit slightly, from 52.4 share to 52. Okay, so we're talking about a 0.4% decline. So, you know, listen, Horace is a really smart guy, and I think that it's really useful to look at these kinds of numbers. But first of all, that decline, and even Horace says, like, this is within a margin of error, right? So this isn't necessarily like a huge trend. Mm-hmm. And also my reaction to this story, and I'd like to hear you guys too, is like, I don't know if it's a big deal that if Android usage is stalled in the U.S. I don't think the growth isn't going to be happening in the U.S., right? Like, the growth is going to be happening globally. And I think for all mobile operating systems, and I think that's a good thing. So what do you guys think? Are you guys concerned that 0.4% down in the U.S.? Within a margin of error, should be worried?
I never concern myself with these numbers, to be honest.
Yeah, I know.
With you. I mean, it's like, whatever. Like, the reality is, if you look around us, I look around me all. Every now and then, I take my my face away from that incredible 1080p display that I look at every day.
Mm. How do you do that, by the way?
I don't know. It's hard. Well, sometimes I wear Google Glass, and then I have to take away my face.
Oh, another display. I guess.
Yeah, no, but the point, right? But the point is that I think if you look around, mostly I see iPhones in the U.S., and that's just maybe as nerds, because we have access to all these different phones and technologies. And I mean, I just got a Firefox OS phone the other day, so I'm like, I mean, all the phones, all the time. But maybe we don't really realize out there how big iOS of a deal iOS is. And it doesn't mean, you know, that you don't see Android devices. You certainly do.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the Android devices I see are not the Android devices I would recommend. And I'm not saying that because people are making the wrong choices. People need to make choices based on their budgets. I understand that. But the way I look at Android is don't go Android unless you go high-end. It just doesn't make sense. You're not going to get an experience that is viable. And I would argue that you're not even going to get a good experience on a Galaxy S4 today because of all the pile of junk that Samsung's piling onto it.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah.
So, some skins are better than others in that respect. But I think that, honestly, you know, when we look at the universe we're in, which is like the tech-savvy reader and the tech-savvy listener, you know, it's just, at this point, it's just mental masturbation about which device is better. Because the reality is most people don't care, right? Most people go out there and buy iPhones because they know they're going to get a good experience. They can buy one at their price point. And most of them are already in the ecosystem, whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean that I can't, you and I and Gina can't use, HTC Ones or G2s or whatever. And certain parts of the world, I'm sure, are very, very Android-centric. But I think that, you know, the bottom line is I'm not surprised to see numbers fluctuate in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a small fluctuation. I think it's a really good point, too, that you make that, definitely the higher-end Android devices are the ones to go for. The problem for Android just in general is that a lot of the times the people buying the low-cost or the free Android devices are first-time smartphone users.
And it's terrible.
Right? And so they're like, oh, well, you know, I've seen all the things that my friends are doing with their fancy phones. I'm going to get this one because it's free. It ends up being a horrible experience.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, I don't hear these complaints coming from the iOS crowd. But you're totally right. You buy into the high-end. But convincing them to do that is a challenge.
And the thing that's interesting to me is then you have people say, well, you know, they could buy a Nexus. It's still hard to convince people to buy a subsidized device. Mm-hmm. The average person still doesn't feel that comfortable. The other thing is, then you look at phones like the Moto X, right? There's build as easy to use, not focused on tech and features and specs, but actually focused on user experience. And I think it delivers, but at the price, at that price, I can buy a Galaxy S4 and HTC One.
Mm-hmm.
So why again? Why do I need to buy a lesser phone? I'm spending the same money. If it was $25 on contract or $50 or even $100, then I'd say, okay, now you have a case. Now you can present something to your friends and family who are not tech savvy and say, you know what? You have an alternative that's carrier supported to go with something else than an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
But right now you can't do that because it's still too expensive.
Right. Interesting. So
that's my take on it.
Excellent. I like that take. Before we move on to email, just real quick, in the Google Glass world, there was an update, XE8. I haven't received it yet on my Glass, but improvements are actually some improvements that we've been waiting, or people have been waiting a long time for now. Video controls, rewind, fast forward, pause. I believe volume control is
finally
one that people have been wanting control over. Better voice navigation commands like stopping nav once you've arrived, show and hide your route. Voice commands to add hashtags and captions to photos, videos. I don't know, some of these I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. As well as, and I think this is interesting, voice note capabilities for apps like Evernote and Path, which is kind of the beginning point of third-party voice commands wrapped into Glass. So that's promising. We're going to see more down that road, I have to imagine. And as well, no pause needed anymore when you're giving a voice command. So instead of saying, okay, Glass, boop, take a picture. You can just say, okay, Glass, take a picture without a pause or whatever, and it'll just fire it off.
So, Gina, do you have the update?
I did. I just got the update. I swear this is a thing that happens with this show. I always get updates like right before we go on the air. I got the update right before we went on the air. And so I just went into settings and I see volume, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it's about
But I haven't had a chance to try out the other stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting mine as well. It's been interesting in that sense. Without the volume, I basically disabled the Bluetooth headset functionality completely because that's just too quiet.
I mean, when it just busts in there, you can't hear anything else. Like, it overtakes everything that you have going on in real life.
Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So cool. If you have Glass, check for the update. I know I'm going to look for it soon here, too. All right, Gina, we have an email.
We do. We have an email. Hi, All About Android crew. This is from Ian Frank. Ian writes, I recently converted all of my passwords that were saved on Chrome's sync function to a LastPass premium account. This works very well, even cross-platform on my PCs. However, on my Nexus 4, it is not so easy. I've switched to Dolphin browser because it allows for add-ons, but overall, I feel it is not a good user experience on the mobile platform. I know that Gina at least uses LastPass. Can you provide some tips for how to effectively use the service on Android? Thank you, Ian. I have tips. Well, first, let me just say, Ian, I so feel you right now. Mm-hmm. I love LastPass. I use LastPass. I've been using it for a long time. The desktop experience, particularly in Chrome, is awesome.
Love it.
The experience on Android really is not good. You're absolutely right. It's a crappy user experience. And it's not really LastPass's fault. It has to do with the fact that Chrome just doesn't allow for add-ons yet on Android. But also for me, the reason why it's a crappy experience, and this is probably true for a lot of people, I mean, the thing that I'm usually logging into is a native app. So even if, even if Chrome did support add-ons, I still, you have to do this thing where you launch LastPass, you enter in your master password, which is really long and hard to enter, right, because it's really secure. And then you look up the site that you need or whatever. Say I'm logging into the Facebook app. And then you get it, and then you have to copy and paste the username and password and then switch over to the other app and paste them in, and it's a complete pain. So, okay, I've got one tip that makes this a lot easier, that made my life a lot easier. And when you go into LastPass on your phone or on your tablet and go into the menu button and into preferences. So there's an option there, the default site action option, which is for when you actually find the username and pass, the credentials you want to use. The default action there is launch, meaning that it'll launch the LastPass browser, which I don't know about you, but I haven't looked at it in a long time. That thing is crap. No, just disable it. It's not even worth it. Change that action to add copy notifications. So what that's going to do is that when you find the credentials that you want to use, you tap the credentials, it copies two items to your notification shade, which is copy username and copy password. Then you can switch over to the app or to the browser or wherever you need your username and password, and you tap each one of those to copy that bit of the credential to your clipboard, and then you can drop it in the username and password. So that makes things a lot easier. You have to do a lot less switching back and forth. Of course, if you do this, there's something sort of inherently insecure here because you're now putting your password, in the shade to put in your clipboard. So I would say copy your password to your clipboard first and then your username to overwrite the password, and then swipe away those notification shades so that if someone picks up your phone, they won't get to it. That made a big difference for me. It reduces app switching a lot. There's one other tip, and you should Google Make Password Management Easier on Android. LastPass actually published a blog post on their blog, which is like blog.lastpass.com, saying straight up, hey, the Android experience isn't that great. They offer this tip that I just told you, that add copy notifications, and they also suggest they've got actually a different input method. They've got like a LastPass-specific keyboard that you can use to drop username and password into the form fields in whatever browser that you use. So hopefully that'll help. The reality is that, I mean, the reality that I've sort of accepted is that better security generally equates to more inconvenience. So I have kind of accepted that, but that copy notifications really helps. That input device might help. And the other thing that really helped me as well was to choose a master password that was relatively easy to enter on a touchscreen keyboard. So whatever that means for you. I mean, at first I had a crazy alphanumeric string with all different special characters. You should have a really strong password, but I found that really difficult to enter because, you know, you have to enter your master password every time you open LastPass. Make it something that's a little touchscreen more friendly, and it'll make using LastPass on Android a little bit easier.
Man, that's a great tip. I just made the change in the settings on my app because, yeah, I've just kind of gotten to the point where I rarely ever use it because it can be so inconvenient to launch into it. I wish it was an add-on in Chrome because that would just alleviate part of it. But like you said, these are native apps and there's no, you know, tentacles from LastPass into all of these other apps, which is kind of what would be the most convenient thing. So
that's
a fantastic tip there.
Yeah.
You were obviously the right person to read that email. Awesome. Love it when it works out like that. Cool. Hope that helps at least a few people out there. I know it helped me. Let's take a break and thank our first sponsor for today's episode, Lookout. We've talked about Lookout plenty of times on this show over the last few years. If you care about your Android phone or tablet and the information on it, Lookout's protection is a must. They have the world's largest mobile threat data set. And they use it to tackle all kinds of mobile security issues, from identifying new threats to finding lost phones and even fighting cybercrime. Lookout for Android provides a number of things: automatic protection for malware, adware, spyware. They have the best Find My Phone solution in the market, including Lock Cam, which can protect your phone or tablet from prying eyes by allowing you to get an email with the picture and location of anyone who incorrectly enters the passcode on your device three times. Signal Flare. You can't locate your phone if the battery is dead. Signal Flare is a feature that emails you the location of your phone when the battery is very low. So you'll have a much better idea of where that dead phone could be once it is, in fact, dead. Contact Backup and Restore as well. Just a number of really handy options to get you out of trouble in a pinch. Lookout Premium for Android features all of the above and more for just $2.99 per month or $29.99 per year. And that's including picture backup and restore, safe browsing, a bolstered Find My Phone protection with remote lock, as well as privacy advisor. Just a number of extra features in there to enhance your experience with Lookout. It's just an awesome app, so definitely check it out. So here's what you can do if this sounds interesting to you. Lookout offers free security solutions for Android. They also actually offer it for iOS and the Amazon Kindle Fire. If that sounds good to you, go take a look. Visit lookout.com/AAA to learn more, and you get the free download. They worry about your security, so you don't have to. And that's definitely something to consider when you end up in a bad situation. It's nice to know that somebody's looking out for you. That's lookout.com/AAA. We thank Lookout for their support of All About Android and the Twit Network. Thank you, Lookout. It's good to have you on board. All right, let's dive into hardware.
Ooh. LG.
Yes.
LG.
LG.
LG. G2. LG. I like things that have so many G's in them because, you know. My name. LG announces the G2. This is a pretty good looking or good sounding new handset. Pretty impressive specs. It's got 2.26 gigahertz quad core Snapdragon 800 processor, 2 gigabytes RAM, a 5.2-inch 1080p IPS display with dedicated graphic RAM. And LG says 5.2 inches is the largest screen that a human can interact with happily. I don't know whether or not we agree. 16 or 32 gigabytes of storage, 13 megapixel rear-facing camera, 2.1 megapixel front-facing camera, 3,000 mAh battery. This is Android 4.2.2 Jelly Bean. And 24-bit hi-fi playback. We've got choices of black and white color options. And the power and volume rocker on the back of the phone. It's a pretty cool-looking phone. Not a lot of bezel at all. It's like all screen, this phone. And it's got a couple of cool new UI features as well. Answer Me auto answers the phone when you lift it to the ear and it lowers the volume. Plug and pop is when you plug in your earbuds, your headset. It automatically detects that and then suggests possible actions to listen, you know, listen to music or et cetera. Text link allows information embedded in text messages to be selected and saved in a memo or calendar or searched in a map on the internet. What else? A few other things. Quick remote, slide aside. It's got guest mode, which lets you just show pre-selected apps when guests access the phone. It looks like a pretty cool deal. No plans to launch a Google Play edition with stock Android. And I think the thing about this phone that's kind of the most interesting is that they're really kind of making use of the back of the phone with the power button and the volume rocker, like we haven't really seen before. Have you guys checked out this phone? Have you either of you tried out this handset?
I was at the launch, and I got to play with it for 15 minutes by myself before everyone else.
How sweet, Ed.
But so you know, I've been following LG pretty closely for a while now because I kind of think of them as the underdog in a way.
I do too, totally.
And I like underdogs, and I see a lot of potential. You know, there certainly have been made some pretty bad mistakes in the past, but I think they've learned. And the Optimus G last year was one of my favorite phones, and it became the Nexus 4, which is still one of my favorite phones. And the Optimus G Pro was a pretty impressive device in February or so. Only launched on AT&T in the US, so not really that relevant. Mm-hmm. But this is big because I think this is the first LG device that's going to launch on all carriers unchanged, which is a big deal. Last year, the Optimus G came unchanged on Sprint, but heavily modified on AT&T and quite frankly destroyed by AT&T. And so what we're looking at is, you know, a true HTC One Galaxy S4 competitor, which in a way merges the two. Yes, it's plastic, but it's much, much better made than a Galaxy S4. If you're familiar with the Optimus G Pro, it's certainly a plastic phone, but the grade of plastic seems to be a better grade, better quality, and that's they've repeated that with the G2. Why it's a mix as well is because it blends two aspects of the cameras. So it has that high-res 13-megapixel sensor that we've seen on the GS4 that gives you fantastically detailed pictures in daytime. But it also has optical image stabilization, which is going to give you fantastic pictures in low light because it compensates for motion, as I explained on Twit this weekend with the chicken cam. I don't know if you guys were there for that. But that's, to me, kind of the way it blends. And Gina's touched on some of the interesting things, which is the very small bezel, mostly display, and the back button. Nice. So the back buttons are really interesting because at first I was like, this doesn't seem right, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when you actually, the first time you pick up the phone, it's magical. One of these two fingers instantly ends up on the buttons, and then you totally get why they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it makes perfect sense. All of a sudden, you don't have to look. The power button protrudes a little bit so that when it's down on the table, you protect the camera. And you know it's the power button, so you know the volume up is above it and the volume down is below
it.
Right. It's got a nice notification light around the power button too, which is replicated in the front under the earpiece. So you have, like the DNA, two notification lights.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hold the top button for 3 seconds, you get their quick memo function, which is arguably not that useful, but it's there.
Sure.
And if you hold the volume down button for 3 seconds, you get the camera. And it also becomes a camera key, single detent. But, you know, these are kind of clever ways of expanding this idea of having this button, these buttons in the back. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people complain and whine about, oh my God, it's so close to the camera. Well, you know, that's certainly an issue. But they've tried to mitigate that by using sapphire glass and coating it so that it doesn't, the fingerprints don't stick to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, I don't know who's complaining about this stuff because every single time I take a picture with any device that I have, I always wipe the lens first. So, I mean, to me, it's a non-issue.
I
have a T-shirt or a hoodie or something, right. And I want to take good pictures, and I try to take good pictures. Mm-hmm, the display is gorgeous. It's 1080p, 5.2 inches, and it's IPS, non-pentile, which is better it's bigger than the HTC One, and I think it's slightly better, perhaps, since it's non-pentile than the AMOLED display on the GS4.
Mm-hmm.
And Snapdragon 800. So you get the kitchen sink, basically.
Absolutely.
In that sense, I think it's exciting.
It's absolutely their hero phone.
I really like the power button on the back. You know, I do development. I'm actually working on my iOS app at the moment, and so I'm holding the iPhone. I'm holding a lot of different handsets. I swear I spend a good amount of time creeping my fingers around the top and the bottom of the phone trying to find the power button all the time because I can never remember which side it's on because all my phones have them in different sides. So I really like the idea of, like, I pick up the phone and my fingers kind of on it. Even though I feel like I'd be worried that if I slid it into my pocket or if I put it down on the table too hard that it would hit it or that it would flip off, or because it kind of looks like it protrudes a little bit.
Yeah.
But I would love to try that out.
It has a really well-defined detent on that button. So, like, you really know when you've pressed it. There's no accidental presses here.
Even when it's resting on
I mean, you could certainly push. Yeah, you have to physically push the phone down. I think they've done that really well. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not expecting it to be as popular as the One or the GS4, but clearly from the amount of ads I see in various web banners, they're obviously starting to spend money on this phone already.
Yeah, you know, in Korea, they're shooting BBs in the sky to promote this phone, so they're going all out.
I saw that. Oh my God, that was kind of crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, not so smart. It was
It was, 20 people were injured. Okay, sorry, I'm just catching up with this story. 20 people were injured at a promo event in South Korea. Someone shot BB guns into the balloons.
Well, basically, the balloons, you know, some of them had phones in them, and I think people.
I think there were cards, so you could.
There we go.
Yeah.
And so people started, you know, they had BB guns, and then they shoot the balloons down and get the cards, and they win a phone. Well, you know, what goes up must come down, and those BBs aren't necessarily going to not hurt when they land on somebody. So, yeah, 20 people injured, which is unfortunate.
Maybe
that was viral. That was on purpose. Maybe really nobody got hurt. They're all actors.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh.
I suppose.
I mean, it's Korea. You never know.
And I should just also point out, it's not without precedent to have the power button on the back. This lowly Motorola Zoom.
Oh, that's right.
Power button right there.
The Motorola what?
About that.
The Zoom?
The Zoom. The egg Zoom.
I forgot about it. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I'm sorry. So this is the Motorola Zoom.
I know. I remember
it was the
now.
First Nexus.
Bad memories.
Okay, all right. I got it.
Bad touch. I don't want to know. No, I'm kidding. It's right. You know, there's a few other devices. Wasn't it... the HTC, the large HTC tablet, didn't have buttons on the back
Jetstream?
As well? The Jetstream? I thought it did.
Hmm.
All of a sudden, I'm like, maybe I'm making this
Jetstream,
up.
Jetstream, that $800 HTC tablet?
Anybody in chat have a $1,900 Jetstream tablet and can check?
We have one here somewhere in the studio,
in the back?
HTC.
Leo probably has one.
Left it here.
He always has everything.
So let's go from talking about something that exists to something that doesn't exist at all. At least we don't have any specific information. But, you know, this is where we enter our fun world of Rumorville and talk about things that may be coming. First, Russell Hawley, who will actually be next week's guest on the show of Geek.com, said on the site that the next Nexus 10 will be made by ASUS, not Samsung. That's based on information from multiple sources, Best Buy inventory listings, which, you know, who knows, and would release sometime around the holiday. I'd love to see an ASUS 10-inch Nexus.
You know, I think one of the issues with the Nexi or Nexuses is that there's been too many manufacturers in a way. And maybe we can have a discussion about that. You know, with the Moto X now, like a lot of people have been clamoring or wanting to see Moto become the purveyor of Nexuses or Nexi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how I feel about that myself. I liked the variety for a while, but I really think that the Samsung Nexus devices have been decent, but they just haven't really been that exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the price points haven't really been that exciting, except for maybe the Nexus 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think that ASUS,
the four price point was pretty darn good.
So I think the LG partnership has worked out well. I would love to see the G2 turn into a Nexus 5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's going to happen, or Google Play Edition. There's still rumors out there of that. This hasn't been completely quelled yet. So,
right.
You know, maybe. Who knows? I'm kind of holding my fingers crossed for this one.
Well, you're projecting into the future a possibility, because Taylor Wimberly of Android and Me, who, by the way, was very spot on with his rumors on Moto X in particular. He nailed that like months ago.
I know.
In a lot of ways. Is saying that the next Nexus phone will hit in Q4 as well. It will be produced by none other than Motorola. So it really seems like Taylor has really good, if this is true, really good inside source of Motorola that's feeding him some interesting information. And if this is the case, I think a lot of people will be pretty happy about that. People want to see a Motorola Nexus.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I'm not against seeing an ASUS-made Nexus 10, considering the Nexus 7s have both been pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they can make them really cheap, which is really awesome. Good for everyone, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, certainly there are some issues. I don't know when that falls into the list of news items, but
Well,
I'm segueing for you.
That may be next, Gina.
That may be next. So the new Nexus 7 has had some issues, apparently. Some users or a good amount of users have been reporting that they're suffering from GPS issues. Issues vary from like total GPS flake out to halting after 10 to 30 minutes. And also some multi-touch errors where phantom touches begin to register for no good reason. And in both cases, Google's aware of the issues and has said that the Android team is investigating. No word on when the fix should be out. So I don't have a new Nexus 7, so I haven't experienced this. Have either of you guys experienced this or talked to any readers or viewers that have seen this?
Yeah, I actually have the problem with the multi-touch on my Nexus 7.
Okay,
I discovered it last night, in fact, when I hadn't used it for a few days, and I guess it's punishing you. It's been updated, yes. Clearly. It's been updated since then. I think it's a software update. It's just a software issue. Because without the update, it wasn't doing it. With the update, it's doing it.
Interesting.
And it's like it's lagging on the typing on the keyboard. Like if I try to enter a password, half the characters are missing.
Oh, I hate that.
And it's like you want to throw it. Like literally, you want to throw it across the room real fast. And
that is one of the
worst
experiences.
They better fix it really fast. Like I don't really care about the multi-touch problems. If it was just a bit of a multi-touch issue, unless I was playing games, I'd be really worried about
it.
Yeah,
yeah. That was
like not being able to use the on-screen keyboard to type stuff is just, you know.
So yeah,
I'm sure it'll be fixed really fast. But I haven't seen the GPS issue. I haven't tried it. I'm overall pretty happy with mine. Other than this recent...
Except for wanting to throw it across the
room. Well, that was last night. I was like, I'm like, seriously, what is going on? And it seems to come and go. Like, sometimes it's worse, and yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
They'll fix it. I hope.
I still kind of want one.
You should. It's slick.
I still kind of want to.
It's really pretty. Look at it. It's a little weird in terms of bezel proportions.
Yes.
Let me bring it up so you can... Like, it has like kind of like really tall... Bottom end.
Yeah,
I have the Google edition of the Nexus 7 from last year with the white back.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep,
aesthetically, so I think even though it's thicker and chunkier, I like it much better. Mm-hmm. But once you see that display, I mean, look at it.
Oh, and the display is.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And it's so fast and slick and beautiful. You really can't go wrong for that price. Mm-hmm. I think at this point. So hopefully they'll fix it. I'm sure they will. I mean, it's really a minor thing, in my opinion. We'll see what happens.
They're working on it. Hopefully it's a software fix and not a hardware fix, right?
I'm pretty sure it's just because I never really had the problem until, like, for some reason, I had just read the story. I think it was like one of those, you know, weird, like, parallel universe things where I was like,
it's a new kind of
as
virus.
I'm reading the story, I'm like, what is going on here? You know, it was crazy.
That is crazy. That's voodoo right there.
Totally.
Well, we have some other pieces of hardware. We've kind of talked a little bit about it in the house. We might as well show it off very briefly. We don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but I've reviewed the Sony Xperia Tablet Z on Before You Buy a little bit earlier this evening or this afternoon.
And so pretty.
Yeah, it's a very nice display. To say that it's incredibly thin and light is an understatement. It's one of those things where you don't understand just how thin it is until you pick it up and play with it. Weighted very evenly, so it literally feels like you're holding a sheet of glass.
Yeah, you pick it up and you're like, this is like sacrilege because it's not possible with science to make something like this. You know, it really
figured it out.
It really feels sci-fi, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. I will say that the design is a little squarish and that gets a little uncomfortable at times. I found it, especially with gaming, like if you're holding it down here, these little edges into your palm, after a while, you know, on a game like Riptide GP or GP2, which is what I played on here primarily, after a while it got a little uncomfortable.
It feels a little unnatural. Burn it. It's a witch.
I like it, though. Definitely gave it a buy.
But I love it. Yeah, I played with it at Mobile World Congress last, and I really, really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's water-resistant.
That's right. I dunked it in a tank of water for the first time on the show, so you know it could have gone either way. And I imagine if it would have failed that, I would have had to give it a don't buy.
It's always exciting when you're in the bathtub checking your email, right?
Oh, I know. All the time.
Right?
All the time. Yeah. Or in the shower.
So water resistant means dunk it in a
no,
tank
it's,
of water.
It's like you can't
like
put it
raining,
under, it can't
okay.
be below 3 feet of water, right. So the bathtub's okay.
Yep.
It's a pressure thing, I think. But I'm not sure.
It's good up to 3 feet.
Again, as I said, it's voodoo. Like, it's unnatural.
It has these little protectors for the ports.
Yeah,
that
that's gonna
are
help.
Annoying.
That's going to help you.
Yeah. Well, that's what they say.
Here's what the takeaway is. It's designed by Sony so that you will accidentally destroy it in the water, so you'll buy a new one.
Ah, I see. It's for the Sony faithful.
Yes.
I got to watch before you buy. I got to see this. I got to see the water thing before you buy, folks.
Hey, it wasn't that exciting. Well, no, wait. It was very exciting, and you should watch.
twit.tv/BYB.
You have some awesome tech
here with
you.
Yeah, I brought some stuff. You know, I always have a bunch of phones. So, you know, I got my Nexus, which is the white one.
The white one?
I know, the white one.
I've only ever seen blurry photos.
I have one of these, which is not an Android device, so I'm going to put it
away.
What
one is that?
This is a Nokia 1020, which takes wonderful pictures.
Which
makes us all, as Android users, drool and go, one day Nokia will make an Android phone, and the world will be a better place.
Android phones will have decent cameras.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Then I have this guy, which is a very well-known entity, the Motorola X in a beautiful white. So you know what's odd about this is it takes nano SIMs, which basically I had to pull out the nano SIM from my iPhone because I had no other real way of using it. Yeah, it's made of some kind of like
Verizon.
Kevlar. Yeah, that's the Verizon one. Hence why I took the nano SIM out of my iPhone.
Yeah.
No, it's very lovely. Again, you know, we've touched on this earlier. I think it's a fantastic phone. It's a fantastic mid-range phone with some uniquely good specs, but really $200 on contract. Are you kidding me?
Mm.
No. You know?
Interesting.
At that price, I can buy this. Look, you know? I mean, they're very comparable in terms of performance.
Nexus 4 to the Moto X.
Like, you know, you can look, there's almost all the same apps installed and everything.
Yeah.
So you feel like the user experience on the Nexus 4 is that much better than the
Moto
X? No,
it's not that much better. It's actually very similar. What I'm saying is that why pay $200 on contract for something that's very similar than $250 unsubsidized is really... I mean, you get the OK Google Now, which I haven't calibrated, which is why it doesn't...
No, I was just going to try. I was going to test it.
No, if you want to try it and go through the calibration process, knock yourself out.
It's been done on other shows. I was able to fool Leo's, though, normal voice.
No, I know. It's not bulletproof by any means. Yeah. And then I have a few others. I have this one that you guys all probably know well. It's the HTC One Mini. Let me see if I can... there it is.
It's a slender.
And it's pretty here.
Yeah.
It is. It's skinny.
It's super pretty. It's like unfortunately, you know, because it's running a lower end processor, it's running a Snapdragon 400. Mm-hmm. It's not quite as zippy as the HTC One. And so it's lacking some features compared to the HTC One. So it is definitely a mini in the sense that, you know, it's not only downsized in size, but also in specs.
Right.
But it's not as badly downsized as the Galaxy S3 last year was, the mini, which was really like going from a high-end phone to a super, lower end of the mid-range at best. This is kind of like a solid mid-ranger.
Man, this is pretty much on par with the same dimensions as the Moto X.
As
the latest iPhone.
It's not... I don't have an iPhone on me today.
Yeah. No, it's not that much smaller.
It's not that much smaller. If you compare it even to the One itself, it's not that much smaller. I don't have one with me right now.
Definitely skinnier, though.
It is skinnier.
For sure.
And skinnier than the regular one. Yeah, so my wife has this really old, beat up... I made the bad mistake of letting her just like pick whatever Android, and she picked the cheapest, and it's a terrible, incredible... Anyway, she needs a new phone. And
how could you let that happen, Gina?
I know. It was a terrible mistake. And I take complete and utter responsibility. I was filled with shame the minute she took it out of the box. I was like, I can't believe I let you do this. But like, she's not the type of person who wants the top of the line, so the One or the GS4, but I want to get her a good phone. So I feel like I'm looking for a solid mid-ranger.
Maybe that mini might be an option. The Moto X is probably a better spec wise than the HTC One Mini in terms of processor performance, but the display I think is better on the. I mean, it's you're going from AMOLED is always a bit weird, you know. And this is an IPS panel, and it's unbelievably good. All you have to do is look at these icons on how they float around on that display. It's really, really nice. I have another one here so that we can wrap it up.
The hits just keep on coming,
well,
folks.
You know, we were talking about HTC, and there's a phone you can't really get in... I should silence it, though. There's a phone you can't really get in the U.S. It is the Butterfly S.
Yes.
So it's the successor to the Droid DNA. in other parts of the world. And you notice it looks exactly like a DNA, right? Except for the bottom that has an extra speaker.
Right.
And then in the back, it's completely different. Instead of matte black, it's this kind of shiny metallic paint.
I like the other one better.
I like the matte black better. What's interesting, though, is that it's got the guts of an HTC One. So Snapdragon 600, boom sound, 2 gigs of RAM, all the goodness, and an incredible 1080p display from the DNA.
Yep.
But they've cheapened on some other things. For example, the camera is ultra pixels, but it lost the optical image stabilization.
Oh.
So same with the HTC One. They're both the One Mini is also ultra pixels, but you lose that. The best part of it, I think, is
optical. I suppose they have to cut corners somewhere.
Somewhere. And then what they did better than the DNA is that it's a little thicker, which means instead of a 2020 milliamp hour battery, it's a 3200 milliamp hour battery. So now, one of the biggest drawbacks of the DNA is being battery life, and that's been completely addressed with this. This is not coming to the US. This one doesn't even have LTE. It's a Chinese model. Notice the infrared port on the top here. That's like the HTC One, which the DNA didn't have. And also notice that the One Mini does not have the infrared.
Seeing more and more devices with IR.
Yeah, and I think, if you have a lot of AV equipment at home, it's really nice to have. Yeah, so, this is not coming to the U.S. in any way, but it's going to be pretty popular in countries like India, China, Hong Kong, Singapore.
It's very nice.
I think there was a Japanese version of the original Butterfly called the J Butterfly, which I actually have, which is really awesome. Because it's like a DNA on steroids, because they've added a whole bunch of like Japanese specifics.
Excellent.
But unfortunately, I haven't heard any rumors of a Butterfly S for Japan, so who knows?
I was a big fan of the Droid DNA.
The DNA is still, I had a reader send me an email today saying, should I buy my spouse or partner, whoever it was, a Droid Razer Mini? Or should I, for the same price, $60, I think, on contract, or DNA? And I said, DNA. I mean, I said, ask them what they prefer in terms of size, because these are not comparable devices, right, in terms of size. But once, if size is not an issue, I'd go with the DNA. No brainer.
How many devices do you have in your possession at any given time?
I don't want to be mugged.
Okay. We won't answer that. We won't ask that question.
No, but I mean, I typically have about 4 phones. And if I have my bag with me, I usually have, my camera, my laptop, maybe a tablet. But I... It's like a merry-go-round of devices at home, because I get review units and I send others back, and it's this ongoing flow. I try to hang on to some that are special.
Sure.
Like the DNA was really special. I think a lot of people didn't realize the DNA was really the flagship phone for a brief hot minute there from HTC,
Yeah, it was. I loved it. Awesome. Well, thanks for the showcase. That's great. And I'm happy to finally kind of be able to pick up the Moto X.
You can play with it after the show. So like you can, have a bit of private time.
Yes. I'm going to go over to my desk and no one bother me for a little bit. I'm going to talk to your phone for a while.
Program the voice recognition on it.
We'll take a look at it. But before we go any further, let's thank our other sponsor for today's episode, Ting. Talked about Ting many times on the show. They are great. They are a no BS Mobile Service, an MVNO reseller of the nationwide Sprint network. But they're very different from the other networks that you're used to. No contracts or early termination fees, no bundling or ride-along services. They have no overage charges or penalties. So if you use more than you thought you would, just pay for what you used. No add-on charges for things like voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding, or other features. They're all part of the service, so you don't get charged for those extras. No mysterious line items on your bill. Ting actually charges you for what you've used, plus whatever taxes they're legally required to collect. And, they don't hide any charges in their recovery fees or any of that BS. Unlimited devices on one pooled plan. You can have as many devices as you want. It's a shared pooled plan of minutes, messages, megabytes. Each device on a plan costs a flat $6 per month. They have a very powerful online account control panel where you can really just kind of take control of your account and your usage and monitor all of that online easily. No hold customer support, very easy customer support between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A real person is going to pick up the phone and talk to you when you call 855-TING-FTW. They're there and waiting for your call. Excellent online support as well. If you just want to stick online, help.ting.com is the place that you go. And it's just very active support portal online.
So you go to Ting. Here's kind of what you would expect. You purchase your mobile device from Ting. Their devices are going to be a little bit more expensive than if, well, definitely more expensive than if you get a subsidized plan with your regular carrier, because you're buying unsubsidized. So you're going to pay a little bit more for that device up front. But you're going to receive it in 2 to 5 business days. You activate with Ting, and you have the option to actually select a new phone number or port an existing one if you can't let go of the one that you're used to having, and everybody knows already. Ting will break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes, and bill you at the end of the month for what you've actually used. Not an upfront, you know, kind of billing that you have to pay, you know, it's all or nothing. None of that here. So here's what you can do. If this sounds interesting to you, it's just a great way to get your mobile phone service. And it's very different from what we see very regularly with all the big players in the mobile world today. Visit Ting.com or Ting today at allaboutandroid.ting.com. There you go. Go to allaboutandroid.ting.com. You can save money, better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. Check out their savings calculator, and that'll actually show you how much you or even your company can save by using Ting. And All About Android viewers will save an additional $25 off your first Ting device. That's when you sign up by visiting allaboutandroid.ting.com. Start saving today. Go there. Check them out. Let us know what you think. We thank Ting for their support of All About Android and TWiT. All right, let's get to the apps.
I was so geeked out about this, guys.
Yeah, it's okay. Cool.
I hope that wasn't too geeky for y'all.
Kosh Duda, who you may know as the maker of Cyanogen Mod, probably the most popular aftermarket Android firmware, showed off his development of a new app that he's made for Cyanogen, which Chromecasts any app running on Cyanogen Mod that has audio or video playback capability, even if it doesn't have the Chromecast hooks built in. So let's look at the video.
In the context of CyanogenMod, yeah. Which is...
And actually, Chad, I think if you skip like on, it's the most popular maybe a third in, he'll kind of get right to it.
Yeah, support.
Yeah, here you go.
It's the coolest thing ever.
If I want to
ever.
Watch a video on my phone, and I'll click the All About Android feed.
Who's that?
Give me a list of stuff I can watch, and it will start playing the video here in a second.
Launch the audio version first, I think.
Nope, that's the audio version. Let me switch over to the video
version.
It's
strange, because the image said video.
It's a bug.
Yes. And our album art
it's
is totally
feature.
Outdated. No, now it looks like it's
so
fixed.
Here we go. We see that it's starting up on my phone to watch.
Look, it's Ron!
You also notice that a notification pops
Ron's
up.
Ron's famous!
I can play this video on my Chromecast.
And they're connected to glass because they're
so
filming it with
that,
glass.
Yep.
I'll click it and then I'll show you.
You know, Kosh, he's all in.
I know. And you know, honestly, I just did two unboxing videos with glass that mm-hmm. I think we're gonna put on our YouTube
feed. Perfect for unboxing.
It's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, it's awesome for unboxing.
So going back to.
So there you go. He basically took the one of the unofficial TWiT apps that does not have Chromecast capability built into it, and if you're running CyanogenMod and it has that intent built into the ad, it automatically would place that Chromecast button at the top of it so you could send
automagically.
It. Automagically.
That's a pretty hot app. Like, so that's odd. It's detecting whether or not the app is playing any audio or any video and being able to push it to Chromecast. Kosh has been doing some really cool stuff with Chromecast, and he's really sort of demonstrating that this is a peer-to-peer, like, push and pull, you know, but like send and receive, you know, a protocol, which is really neat. So I'm excited to see this happen, and I hope that this is going to, you know, that the intent, or you know, the regular share intent, you know, to send to my Chromecast will get included sort of officially into stock builds of Android eventually. I know right now Google has Chromecast apps like a little bit locked down. You have to use the SDK or whatever. But it's really cool to see that. And I was super geeked out that he used All About Android. So.
I know, totally.
It's like, we're on Kosh's TV. So happy about that.
Yay. Might be listening to this right now. I'm going, please, guys, come on. No, I was pretty geeked out about that too. And had a lot of people on Twitter send that.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
Real quick here, not a whole lot to say about this, but if you're a book fan, which a few of you might be, Google Play Books actually had an update. Got a bit more book-like. With the latest update, you can now scan and highlight certain books in their library, particularly the ones that are OCR converted, of course, allowing you to kind of get into that specific text and not just be scanned digital image. Copy text is also allowed, given the copyright allows you to do so. And those who rent digital books through the service can now are also enabled to highlight and make notes for later reference. So, you know, if you use, I don't know, does any of us use Google Play Books? Do we read?
Not really.
Do we read Kindle. Books here?
Kindle. No.
Chad, you read, don't you?
I read audiobooks.
Okay.
There you go. That's a way of reading.
Yeah.
I do too,
you know,
actually.
That's the best.
I read through my ears.
It's yes. best to read audiobooks when you're driving.
Oh, heck yeah.
Of anything, like, you know, don't read when you're driving.
Now, if they integrate reading these books to you through the app, then maybe we're on to something. But anyways, that's cool. I think that'll probably, you know, these are further kind of ways that Google is holding to its promise at I/O of really kind of, you know, building up its educational footprint as far as Android is concerned. Being able to highlight, notate, that's good for students, absolutely, as well as kind of their textbook initiative through Play. So there you go. That's it.
Last little note in apps. If you've been getting this really annoying error, which I've been getting, if you've been getting package file invalid when your apps are updating on your Android device, this is a thing. It's happening to people. It's been happening to me. It's been driving me crazy. I thought maybe it was my phone. I reset it. Didn't help. Google knows. They're investigating. So hang in there. It should get fixed soon.
Google's working on a lot of things right now.
Yeah, Google's working on a lot of things right now.
Including self-driving cars.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. If they can get self-driving cars down, they should be able to get why the Play Store's packages are apparently invalid. I don't like my packages.
I think it's
invalid.
Just Jean-Baptiste, like, just breaking code randomly in the background. He's like,
in a dark, in a dark corridor, hunched over.
Like, he's like, package invalid.
They're going to love this.
Every five times somebody randomly downloads something, I'll just throw an error message. Keep them on their toes.
Jean! camera pulls away. Looks like, let's see here. I didn't assign this email, but I'll read it. Okay, so let's see here. Nathan S. writes, oh, and I don't know if there's an answer to this. Okay, I'll just read it. I was just kind of touched by his question here. I went on an Alaskan cruise last week and dropped my phone on the last night of the cruise. It's a Motorola Droid Razr. The screen cracked. Now it's not accepting touch or anything. But now for the real problem. I met a really awesome girl on this cruise and got her number. But because I was at sea, I had my data turned off when I dropped the phone. Therefore, no contact sync. So we lost the number. Is there a way I can recover this contact via my PC? What do we think?
Yes. Did they ever text?
That's a good... Well, see, I don't know this information. Well, no, but if they had a text, what...
So I had this happen to me. And not quite... I wasn't at sea. And I thought at first that they were going to say they dropped it in the ocean, which would be really sad. Oh, my phone!
What do I do with that contact?
Anyway, yeah. But no. I had the weirdest thing happen. I had a Black Nexus 4, and volume up button got stuck. And, occasionally we'd unstuck and stick again. And I was like, one day I got sick of it, and I was like, maybe if I bend the phone a little bit, it'll unstick the button, because maybe there's something jammed behind there. And, you know, phones can take a bending.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've tried this, but... You know, like you can go like this and you can feel them bend. And I'm not putting a lot of pressure on there.
Yeah.
I did exactly that with my Nexus 4 and the entire screen shattered in a heartbeat.
Oh, man.
Like crack into a million pieces. It must have been pre-stressed and have like a pre-fracture in there or something from, you know, months of using it. So, of course, the touchscreen dies because it's a Nexus and it's an in-cell touch. Anyway, the bottom line is I had to get, there was some stuff that wasn't backed up. My text database wasn't, for example. Mm-hmm. And I wanted, it's the only thing I cared about. Everything else, my pictures, all that was backed up. Mm-hmm. So I was like, how do I get my text database off? And so you can't access the screen or anything. So I found that you there's a way to turn on ADB debugging if you don't have it turned on, which I didn't by default. The way to turn it on by flashing one of the Cyanogen bootloaders, I think it was. And then once you have that turned on, you can access all of the database files. And you can actually use ADB to get the database files. Once you have the DBs, you can use a hex editor to look around for keywords of text messages you've used. In my case, there was an address I was trying to look for, and I knew the name of the person. I did a search on the, and you know, lots of hex code went by, but eventually I found the number I wanted.
Wow.
So it took me about a half hour, It's a bit of, you know, debugging
there's
work.
A will, there,
but the bottom
a way.
Line is that after that, I went in the bootloader and wiped the phone because I was done. I backed up the DBs and that was it.
So was this a rooted device that this happened on?
No.
Okay.
No. This is like not even the bootloader was unlocked. So okay. I was like, it was hardcore. I did a lot of Googling to get to that.
Yeah.
But the point is there's a way to at least, so if they have access.
So there is a way.
So if they have text messages by this person, that's okay. The trick.
Okay.
Hopefully they at least exchange that because I don't know how you can get to the contacts DB. There's probably a way.
Well, Jason,
Gina, you
know. You posted this. I actually didn't know off the top, but there has to be a way, right? I mean, my first instinct was like plug it into a computer and then get to the memory. And then right. Jason, you posted this on Google+ asking the question.
Got a lot of answers. First of all, Jerry Hildenbrand, a man who I respect his opinion from Android Central, said open phone up, remove main board, swap with a functioning unit, pray. So there's that. That doesn't instill a whole lot of hope. Some other people were saying USB USB on the go. And I believe the Droid Razr... Was it the Droid Razr?
I don't think it has it.
The Droid Razr, does it not have that?
I know the Nexus 4 doesn't. That's another thing I was looking at, using a mouse and keyboard instead of the touchscreen, because my display still worked. It was just the touchscreen that wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, mouse and keyboard. Nah, it didn't work.
Jordan Hotman says if he can access the data partition, then he can pull the data/data/com.android.providers.contacts/contacts.
There you go. So to get to the DB. DB.
Yeah.
I think the long answer here, or the short answer here, is I hope you're geeky enough to be able to see this one through. Is she worth this?
Also, effort? You know, I mean, there might be a simpler solution, really. Actually, go on eBay and look to see if you can buy a Razr replacement kit like that.
Uh-huh.
Do it yourself.
Yeah.
Or go into the Verizon store or whatever and be like, hey, can you get my contacts off
this
phone?
That's a really good point, actually. Some people on that Google+ thread pointed that out. Sometimes you can take it in and they'll do a dump. But I don't – let me rephrase that.
Jason.
They'll do a system dump. There we go. But I don't know if they need access to the
– Yeah, and then do you really trust the prepubescent – you know, tech at Verizon store going, oh, my little
no,
pet
I'm not
project,
sure.
My precious.
I'm not sure I do. But how about this, Nathan? I hope this is enough for you to figure it out. If anything, go to the show notes at twit.tv/AAA. You'll find my Google+ post, or you can go to my Google+ and find my post on it and post in there and say, I'm the guy that wrote it. And connect with some of the people in there as well, because there's a lot of really smart people that tackled this and there's a lot of interesting answers. I'm not sure which of those are actually going to work in your case, but if they're connected directly to you, then you might be able to answer each other's questions a little bit better and get specifically to the point. Sounds like there's a way. You just got to be really nerdy to get there.
There's 38 comments here, and one person says he works in mobile forensics, and if he wants, he can private message him and help you out. So there's some good stuff going on that thread. So
everybody respects and understands your predicament. You got to get in touch with this girl. She could be the one.
You got to call this girl. She could be the one.
All right. I hope we're helping with a love connection here.
We'll
see. Please let us know, Nathan, how this all turns out. All right. Let's get into the arena. This is going to be fun.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right. Last week, I was out, but I definitely recognize some of these apps, specifically Splashtop, which I think is pretty awesome. Iaz had Splashtop, Ron, Transit App, Gina, Chrome with a K. The results are in, and Splashtop did, in fact, wow, it's a pretty close race there for first.
Iaz mopped the floor with us, but I beat Ron, so that makes me happy.
There you go. Good. Phew.
Sadly, he's not here for me to mention that to him. But I'll mention it to him next week.
That's what you do. You pick on the guy that isn't here to defend himself. I fully support that theory. So I was the one that was out last week. So that usually generally means that I go first. So I'll go first. And this shouldn't take too long. And I really pray that the demo goes smoothly. I chose an app that kind of got a little steam the last couple of days for people who don't have a Chromecast but want to still utilize the service. I picked CheapCast. This is a free app.
You can install it. So in this case, I'll show you on the Motorola Zoom.
I was going to say, you're using a Motorola Zoom for a demo?
I am. I use it often for the demo,
You're like really pushing your luck.
I'm a renegade. What can I say? Okay, so CheapCast is running. I'll just go here. It's a pretty simple app. You can name your device. So I've named it CheapCast Zoom. You can set it so that it starts on boot. Custom service, I didn't really play around with that. Allow registration of custom apps with CheapCast. Be interesting to see kind of how that plays out. But basically, you click a button up there, and that starts the service. Now, down in the notification pane, I have service enabled CheapCast. So this is seen as a Chromecast, essentially, a kind of receiving point for that. Now, I'm on Twit Production Wi-Fi. I'll go ahead and go on my Galaxy Nexus and make sure I'm on Twit Production Wi-Fi. I am... So let's go into, let's see.
I love your picture.
Let's go to play music here.
Your login picture is awesome.
I'm not listening to my own music. No, I am, because I have to test it before I send it off to get mastered. But let's pick something else. Let's, let's pick Poison. I didn't play that enough last time.
Never go wrong with Poison.
Fallen Angel, live, by the way. All right, so you can see the button at the very top, the Chromecast button, right? I don't have audio piping through. Sorry about that. But I'll go ahead and hit the button. It says connect to CheapCast Zoom. I'll hit that. Pray that this launches. And what do you know?
Wow.
It did. I think I actually now have to hit play now that it's connected. And are you doing it? Come on. You can do this.
Oh, yeah. Poison!
Yeah, see? It's as simple as that. All right. So I'll go ahead and pause that. I'll show you that it isn't just a fluke. I'll go into YouTube, and we'll see what happens when I can break here.
Poison on YouTube. You need to search for poison. Come on. On a theme here.
Oh, wait a minute. Ah! It's too late. I'm showing... Twit content, apparently.
Right on.
All
that's
right.
Meta.
Well, that's okay. I'll go ahead and send it to the Zoom. And sure enough, over here, it launches into the YouTube app. And we should get a video of Jeff crashing the double robot. Wow. That was quick to post. That was from earlier. Anyways. There you go.
This is awesome.
All right. So there are some limitations. I'll pause it on the Galaxy Nexus. So there are some limitations right now. This is very early stages. I think he's even saying this is alpha/beta. It is in the Play Store. You can get it for free right now. I've got it to work with YouTube. I've got it to work with Google Music, obviously. It doesn't work with Netflix right now. And I think I have to imagine there's some sort of like DRM reason for that. I'm hoping that they work that out, because that's a big reason why you might want to do something like this.
DRM BS, you don't say.
I know. Yeah, weird. I know. And I should also point out that this might be what I turn my Nexus Q into, because you can install
a Nexus Q build.
You can install CheapCast to your Nexus Q and have that be a Chromecast entry point.
Wow.
Which I think is great, because I just can't bring myself to take the Nexus Q out of
my room. My Nexus Q, but it's useless right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, there's some things to work out here. Not having Netflix on this is a big downer, because that's one of the main things that I would totally use this for. But I think it's a great start, and I think it's just interesting stuff for free. Like, why not? Everybody can get in on the Chromecast, at least the YouTube and Google Music aspect.
Well, I think it's actually really exciting to be able to recycle old products like that, right?
Totally.
I mean, if it wasn't your Zoom, it could be even a phone that has an HDMI output.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just dock it next to your TV.
Tape it to the back
of
the TV.
Exactly.
And just power it, you know, plug it into power. It's taped back there. No one ever knows it's there.
Like, you move 5 years later, like,
what is
this Droid Razor HD doing back here?
There you go. All right. So that is CheapCast. You can find it in the Play Store. Interesting little app. I think it's great for those that didn't get a Chromecast or haven't received theirs yet. Check it out and you can start to play with it. All right. Nice. So that is that. Miriam, what do you have?
You know, mine is not nearly as exciting as yours. I wrote a story about a new version of Drippler that came out yesterday. So let me just, I don't know if you guys know what Drippler is, but...
I had never heard of this before.
Here it is. It's a very nice logo. It's very shiny. What it is basically a recommendation discovery engine of articles basically they it's like tips, apps, updates, and accessories mm-hmm. for your device. So it knows what device you have from the properties of your device mm-hmm. and what OS you're running, like what version of Android. And it knows even what carrier you're on if you install on a phone. And so you then get recommendations from that. So, for example, here, you know, it's picked a bunch of stuff about the Nexus 7 because I have a Nexus 7. And I haven't really customized this. It's like default install of the app. It also has a component where it can connect to your Facebook to kind of get a feel for what topics are you write about a lot. But I wasn't quite sure if it would spam my friends or something, so I didn't want to go there. Mm-hmm. I can probably ask the developer, see if what it's not very clear from the description what it does with your Facebook, and didn't want to go there. But if you go up here, you can choose between just news and tips. And again, it's showing kind of the same things. But then you can kind of go like games, for example, and it'll give you some game recommendations for this device, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have things like, you know, recommended apps for the Nexus 7. And as you can see, if you drill down into a story, it's kind of cool because it shows you a little bit of a side view. And as you can see, since I just installed it, it shows you how to navigate. It's kind of like Flipboard-ish. Mm-hmm. And if you go back, you know, you can also do a search, which is really good. So, for example, we can search for Twit and see what we can find here. So it's going to look through all of my things that are relevant on Nexus 7. And there you go. Oh, well, it picked Twitter as well, which is not really where I was going with this. And then here, you know, you have like, you can favorite things, which is cool. I didn't favorite any. Like, let me just quickly show you how you can do that. If you tap on an article, you can see, like, you can, you know, star it, and you can heart it, and you can share it. When the sharing part is, you know, what you're used to in Android, all the apps that you have available. And then if you go back here real quick, there's more sharing going on here. And finally, pretty extensive settings pane here, including that Facebook login I was mentioning earlier. Also, you can spoof it to believe it's a different device. So if you want to check
everything else, right.
Didn't work quite right. Mm-hmm. You can say, oh, this is actually not an Nexus 7. This is an Arcos 7, you know, and then it just does a completely different recommendation thing. I'm going to set it back to Google before I forget. Nexus 7.2, that's the one. So, you know, I mean, I haven't really used it much. I just wrote about it. So I thought, hey, I just wrote about it. So maybe give it some exposure, because the idea of a recommendation based on your, you know, based on what you like, you know, what your device is, what you like to do is kind of cool, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it also works in landscape and portrait mode, et cetera, et cetera. It's nothing exciting. It's free, so. There you go.
That's cool.
It's kind of my choice.
I like that it offers up information based on the device that you're using. Maybe there's some tips and tricks and everything that only apply to, you know, like when you think of devices like Samsung devices, you know, for example, I mean, they do so many crazy software things that are different from anything else. Like, you're not going to find out about that in many ways other than something like that.
And the cool thing about it, this is version 2, just came out today. And then there's an iOS version. I don't think they've updated to version 2 yet for those of you on iOS devices. Mm-hmm. And also, it pops up notifications when some, like, say a new update was published and we wrote about it on Engadget and you were, you know, one of your Drippler feeds was Engadget. It would mm-hmm. actually pop that up and say, hey, looks like you have the right device for this update. So that's kind of cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff. All right, Drippler. And I had never heard of it, and it sounds like from the reviews and everything that I was reading that it was a big upgrade from 1 to 2.
Yeah,
and
it's a big deal, apparently.
They kind of completely rehauled it. So check it out. Drippler. Do a search for Drippler, and you shall find it. All right, Gina, it is your turn. Time to get fit.
Yeah. So my pick this week is my favorite health and fitness app for Android. It's called Lose It, with the exclamation point, Yahoo style. Lose It. And so I'm going to have the skinny guy demo the weight loss app.
I need to lose some weight.
All right. So basically, ever since my daughter was born, I have not taken very good care of myself. So I've been trying to just eat better and exercise more. And I wanted to find an Android app that would help me do that. And there are a couple of really good apps that do this on Android. I really like Lose It for a lot of reasons. So you start up the app like Jason just did. And you basically just put in your, you know, username, password. And you put in how much you weigh now, how tall you are, and then what your goal is, or, you know, male or female, how tall you are, and then what your goal is. And
6 feet 12.
Yes. Hey, now, I'm not tall. I'm only 6'8".
Oh, yes. Only 6'8". And then, yeah, your birthday is, I guess it kind of figures out what your metabolism is going to look like. And then it kind of gives you, based on your goal weight and based on your current stats, what you want to do. Do you want to lose a pound a week? Do you want to lose a pound and a half, 2 pounds? The slower that you lose over the long term, sort of the general consensus is that the more likely you are to keep it off. So I've been using this app every day for the past 4 weeks, and I'm going for between 1 and 1.5 pounds per week. And I've lost about 6 pounds so far. So it's been working really well. So the premise of the app basically is that if you want to lose weight, it's about calories in versus calories out. And so this is basically just a log. What am I eating and how am I exercising? What kind of calories am I taking in and what kind of calories am I burning? So the hard thing about this kind of thing is that you just have to be disciplined about capturing, you know, what did I stuff in my mouth today? And this app actually makes it really, really easy. So each day you have a log and you say, okay, for breakfast, I had a hard-boiled egg and a cup of coffee. And for lunch, I had a sandwich. And it basically calculates the amount of calories each one of those meals are. And each day you have kind of a calorie threshold, a budget that you get. So say, you know, you get 1,500 calories a day and that's going to help you lose weight. So you get to keep track throughout the day. How many of my calories have I used up and how many more can I eat? And when you exercise, you can either manually log your exercise or this app actually will connect to fitness devices. So I wear a Fitbit. So as I walk, the calories that I burn, that automatically goes into Lose It because they're talking to one another. It works with Jawbone. It works with Nike Fuel Band. Oh, wow. Works with Runkeeper. It works with all the Wi-Fi enabled scales. So when you weigh yourself, that'll automatically go into Lose It as well, because Lose It will track your weight over time and it'll say at this rate of weight loss, you'll have reached your goal in February of 2014. So it does kind of all that planning out for you, which is really, really nice.
One serving of paella, 1,990 calories? Really?
Yeah. You know, it's, so here's the thing about writing down everything that you eat. First, it's tough. I'll be honest. You got to be really disciplined about it. It's tough. There are times when you have to, you have to guesstimate, you have to, you know, Lose It's database of foods is really, really extensive. And there have only been a few times that they haven't had exactly what I think I've eaten. In that case, you know, you just sort of, you sort of guesstimate or you pick something close. But yeah, it's really, really kind of an eye opener. But they've got tons of brand name foods from restaurants and from different grocery stores. There's also a barcode scanner. So, you know, I had a cereal bar for breakfast this morning. I just waved my phone in front of the barcode. It scanned it in. It knew how many calories it was and just entered it for me. I mean, this is the thing that you're really looking for in an app like this. The entry has to be extremely easy, because I'm just going to be straight up honest with you, it's a pain in the rear to do this, right? So the app has to make it as easy for you as possible. And Lose It does. You can, if there's certain meals that you eat regularly, which I do, I'm kind of a creature of habit, but if you cook certain meals, you can set up recipes. And once you get them set up once, you can save them and you can enter them into your log really easily. It'll let you know how you did in the past week. Got social features. So if you got friends who are also trying to lose weight, if you're doing this with a friend or a spouse or partner, family members, you can add them in and see how they're doing. It can tweet for you. It can post to Facebook. You know, if you've lost some weight, it'll tweet your accomplishments, and it doesn't necessarily publish your weight if you don't want it to, but it will publish your accomplishments, which is a nice way to kind of get that social pressure and kind of, put yourself out there and help you stay committed. So yeah, I've been really digging it. And I realized that it's been out forever. It's got great reviews. It's got millions of downloads. I just looked and saw that it had never been covered in the arena. And I've basically been living in this app in the past 4 weeks, and it's been working really well. So I thought I'd feature it. It's free to download and install. They do have a premium. You can sign up for premium, which I think is like $30 a year if you want. And I think the premium features involve connecting things like Fitbit and other apps and devices. It's definitely kind of like some extra features there, but you can download and start using the app, try it out for free. So yeah, that's Lose It.
Lose It with an exclamation mark.
That's pretty Lose cool. It. Is it also on iOS?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's got a full website as well, loseit.com. So you can log in there and enter in all your stuff. If you don't want to be typing in your chicken recipe into your phone, you can also do it online. Well,
somebody's got to have to create one day a thing where you can take a picture of your meal and it goes to the Google servers. and some magically gives you, this is how many calories that is.
Yeah, no, it's true.
No,
it's
seriously, true. I think it's going to happen.
Or even just take a picture of a meal and then take a picture of the recipe that got you there. And then it'll like pick it all apart and portion it.
Because that's the ultimate, right? You just take pictures of what you eat and then it just keeps track.
Yeah,
the hard thing for me is guesstimating like amounts, you know.
Yes.
So you'll go and you'd be like, I ate chicken, how many ounces? I have no idea. And that's sort of a skill that you have to start to develop on your own. Like, okay, you know, the size of my fist is about 4 ounces or whatever. And that's something that I feel like technology could really help with. Because there are times when I'm kind of a completist, I'm kind of a nerd, I want to have it exactly right. And it always bothers me when I don't have like exactly the amount. But you know, you have to kind of get okay with guesstimating, but I would love to see that. I would love to be able to just take a picture of my meal and for Google to be like, this looks like it's about this many calories. But I don't know. That also seems like a really difficult problem to solve.
You know what we need to have? I just had this crazy idea for an invention. You can pay me later, all of you people, because somebody's going to make this. Imagine this is your phone. You put it down. You put something on top of it. And it weighs it.
And it weighs it.
Using Piezo, because... Oh. That's all. Somebody needs to add that sensor, and then you could just weigh your food that way. Mm-hmm. Done. All right. So who's going to do that first and give me $1 million? Come on.
Yeah, we've had a lot of really good ideas on this show, and most of the time they don't turn into anything. Or if they do, it takes so much time to prepare that we haven't seen the end result yet.
But that would be good, right? And yeah, that's totally possible, right? It's just a piezo sensor.
And a protector for the screen. So
scratching, you know, with a ceramic mug, you're going to end up scratching that screen real fast.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or whatever container you happen to be placing on it.
But I mean, you could do it from the back, whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like that. That's the next sensor. It's the next sensor. All right. So three awesome apps I have to say this week in the arena. What was your favorite? Was it Cheapcast, Dribbler, or Lose It? You can vote for your favorite by going to AAAPoll.com/122 for episode 122. AAAPoll.com/122. Early reports are in and out of the gate.
Yes.
Cheapcast.
I can see that.
Cheapcast early, but you can never trust these early reports because the downloads, the people that download, they end up voting differently a lot of times.
You know, you need to get your fans to be on top of it more for you there. You know, they're not really supporting you if that happens. You need to whip them into shape.
I think they just vote for their, you know, with their heart.
Ask Leo. It's all about the iron fist.
We don't want independent thinkers. We just want fans.
Yes. Exactly. No independent thinkers.
I trolled you with love, Nexus. I trolled you with love.
So next week, I think I definitely mentioned it earlier, Russell Holly of Geek.com will be joining us once again for the show. Very excited to see that. But Miriam, it is always a pleasure having you on the show.
It's a pleasure
and
to be here.
Even better having you here in the studio.
I know. I try to do that more often.
Any way you can come onto the show is fantastic. But having you here in the studio,
I mean, it's
is
like,
great.
You know, a trip to the countryside. It's really kind of quaint and exciting.
Totally.
I crossed the Richmond Bridge and I was like, oh, the Richmond Bridge. I haven't been on the Richmond Bridge in so long. This is an adventure.
Yeah. You should go to a couple of farms while you're out here.
I know. I think so.
Yeah. Get some vegetables.
Some chickens.
Yes.
So I can do my chicken city cam.
I got to. Yes, exactly. And Petaluma is the place to go for chickens, by
exactly.
the way.
That's why I thought it was funny.
By the way. Miriam, this is your opportunity to let people know what you're up to, where they can find your work.
I am still the senior mobile editor at Engadget. So you can find me on Twitter at TNKGRL. That's my handle. It's Tank Girl without the vowel. It's easy to remember. I'm on Google+. I'm on Facebook. On Facebook, I'm a little harder to find. But, you know, you're clever. You're stalkers out there. I know you are. Look for me on Engadget. And, thanks for having me. It's been great.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Awesome having you.
Yeah, I would love to have you back again soon. Cool. Thank you again. Gina, what you got going on?
You can see everything that I'm up to at ginatrapani.org. I also co-host a show on the Twit Network This Week in Google, which airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific. So you should come on by and watch live tomorrow and chat. And check out my Android app. It's todotxt.com.
Yes. Do check that out. Chad, what's up in the world of Red?
Not much is up in the world of Red, except for this week in YouTube, OMG Craft. I video switched this show all about Android, doing stuff on my own YouTube channel at youtube.com/OMGChad. Thanks.
Excellent. You have a lot of stuff going on right now, including Red. You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell or follow my musical exploits if you so want to at yellowgoldmusic.com. Kickstarter's still going, just saying, and I'm pretty happy with where it's going. You can find all the information there, yellowgoldmusic.com. That is it for this week. It's been a fantastic episode, I have to say. You can always leave us a voicemail if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email at aaa@twit.tv. You attach a link to a video, it magically becomes a video mail at aaa@twit.tv there as well. Find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're on Google Plus, as well as, you know, there's a fantastic Google Plus community for All About Android that we participate in. Show notes can be found at twit.tv/AAA. That's the full, uncut, unedited show notes that we use during the show. So you can find everything there, as well as our past episodes there, iTunes, YouTube, all over the map. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday, starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.